Welcome to Bed Crime Stories Podcast. I'm your host, T. Hi, guys. Hope you're having a wonderful day. If you're new here, a warm welcome. Thank you for checking out my channel. All I ask is that after listening to and or watching the video, if you find you enjoyed it or learned something, smash that like button and consider subscribing. Now, let's dig in. An expert in body decomposition. Hi there. T here. I hope you're having a marvelous Easter weekend. I wanted to share some more information on the Sebastian Rogers case. Before I get into my main topic, I just want to share some updates. So the video that Seth Rogers, who is Sebastian's biological father, the video that the police showed him as proof of life was of Sebastian and the mother, Katie Proudfoot, outside the restaurant. So not inside, but outside, and Seth had requested proof that his son was alive on the Sunday before he disappeared. So that is what the cops showed him. It's believed that the restaurant was actually the Texas Roadhouse and not BJ's, as I previously reported. Seth Rogers also said that not on the last visit, but on a previous visit when he had Sebastian, Sebastian had expressed not wanting to return to the Proudfoot home. He didn't say why. The third update is that the Cajun Navy, who was down there searching for Sebastian, has abandoned the search, and they're claiming that it's because they've been getting threats. If you're following the case, you probably know that JLR of JLR Investigates and Jimmy of Dolly Vision have been down to Tennessee, and they've been searching. And they were both treated spectacularly badly by the Cajun Army, sorry, Navy. My dad was in the Army, so I'm kind of an Army brat. Sort of sounds like people have been attacking the Cajun Navy. It sounds like it may be locals and not so much fans of Jimmy and JLR. But either way, the Cajun Navy has used that as an excuse to abandon the search for Sebastian, which is extremely hurtful to both Sebastian and Seth Rogers. 15-year-old Sebastian has been missing for more than a month, and he was living with his mother, Katie Proudfoot, and his stepdad, Chris Proudfoot, in Tennessee. Sebastian hasn't been seen for more than a month, and people never just vanish. They end up somewhere, either in a body of water, like student Riley Strain, in the ground, like Shanann Watts, in a fire pit, like Tylee Ryan, in an evil person's care, like so many young kids and teenagers. You get the idea. So Sebastian is somewhere. We just don't know where. Chris Proudfoot has been married 5 times. This is a troubling fact because it hints at a man who either has poor judgment in picking spouses or, more likely, who does not make for a good husband. After hearing one of Chris's ex-wives on another channel called Trev Time, I'm leaning toward the not such a good husband explanation. The ex-wife is named Nina Gomez, and she has a story to tell about Chris that is highly disturbing. Overall, it's a tale of a very controlling, manipulative, cruel, and vindictive man who has trouble keeping his temper and his hands in check. I'm talking about a stepfather who doles out extreme corporal punishment, cruel chastisements, soul-damaging name-calling, even to a 3-year-old, and even to a newborn. If we are to believe Nina Gomez, and this is really a he-said-she-said situation, so you can't really know, then Chris Proudfoot is a dangerous monster who lacks a moral compass and a heart. And the people who are most vulnerable around him are children and women. This doesn't bode well for Sebastian Rogers. We know Chris Proudfoot punished Sebastian with a belt on the butt at least one time. Sebastian told a teacher, who in turn told CPS. If Chris Proudfoot couldn't love even his newborn baby daughter, how was he going to treat a child not of his own blood? A child who was autistic, had special needs, was very unique, was a teenager who sometimes rebels as he transitions from a child to an adult or a young adult. The ex-wife, Nina Gomez, has an important story to tell, because if it's true, it screams of an explosive, cruel, and unpredictable Chris Proudfoot. What he allegedly did to Nina and her three kids and her parents is deplorable. Could this hint at Katie Proudfoot maybe also being controlled by Chris, browbeaten and willing to do anything to keep her man happy and just keep her man, maybe? JLR of JLR Investigates said that he noticed Katie never wears makeup in her interviews, despite appearing in all her photos on Facebook fully made up. JLR thought this might be a tactic to look distressed and sad. I believe we saw that tactic used by Wendy Adelson in her 5-hour interview with the police. But I'm wondering if there's another explanation for Katie's lack of makeup. Could she be trying to please a controlling man? Have any of you ever dated or married a guy who was kind at first, but then who began insisting that you don't wear makeup, that you don't get your nails done or wear polish? I briefly dated one of these, and he turned out to have a very controlling personality and a very explosive temper, the kind that will kick your front door in if you do something that ticks him off, like try to break up with him and stick all his belongings on your front stoop because you're afraid of him. Could that explain why Katie doesn't wear makeup in her interviews? Or is it a combination of trying to look devastated and also trying to appease a controlling husband? Only Katie and Chris know for sure. So Nina met Chris when she was 35 through an online dating website. After dating Nina for a relatively short period of time, Chris proposed. Nina said yes, and she said that in the beginning the relationship was good, as they usually always are, right? At the time, Nina was living in Albuquerque, New Mexico with her two children from a first marriage. The kid's father was in the military and he lived in Texas. So after their divorce, he continued to see his children every weekend by driving 3 hours from Texas to New Mexico. After Nina married Chris Proudfoot, they moved to San Diego. Her children's father obviously wasn't happy about it because it meant he couldn't see his kids. But Nina moved anyway, believing that Chris loved her. By the way, I think part of Chris's appeal to women, especially single women with children, is his ability to make a very good living as a heavy machine operator, which allows the woman to stay home to raise her children. Per Nina, after getting married, Chris changed dramatically, and it wasn't a good change. One of the problems was the way he treated her kids. Nina started to cry when recalling a time when Chris Proudfoot disciplined her then 3-year-old son. Nina didn't want Chris, quote, disciplining her kids, talking ugly to them, or hurting their feelings, end quote. During one incident that really upset Nina, Chris spanked her 3-year-old very hard. Nina told him, "You can't do that to my son. He's 3. He's still a baby," end quote. And Chris got upset and said, "Well, he needs to man up." Over time, Chris became even more aggressive. At some point, Nina got pregnant with a baby girl that she later named Faith. When Nina told Chris about the pregnancy, he allegedly wasn't happy and wanted her to get rid of the baby, if you know what I mean. Nina was very upset, so she called her parents and they were like, "No, you're not doing that." So Nina moved back to New Mexico to stay with her parents. So Nina went through the whole pregnancy without Chris. At some point, a friend of Nina's in San Diego called to say that Chris was giving away her furniture and home decor. "Don't you mess with my home decor." Seriously, that would piss me off. Nina and her mother then drove to San Diego to see what was going on. Nina didn't give Chris a heads up, and when Nina and her mother pulled up, Chris was in the action of taking one of the beds out. Chris apparently dropped the bed, went in the house, and locked the door. As you can imagine, Nina was upset, so was her mom. Nina, her mom, and the kids stayed in Chris Proudfoot's house despite it being very awkward. Nina began to feel baby Faith moving, and she placed Chris's hand on her stomach and said, "Can you feel her moving?" And Chris just said, "No." Chris told Nina's mother he wasn't happy about the baby. After a couple of days of this horrible treatment, Nina and her mother left and went back to New Mexico. By then, Nina wanted out of the marriage. She later gave birth to Faith alone. Ironically, Chris kept calling the hospital from San Diego. She was in New Mexico. Apparently, he was very rude on the telephone. He was very rude to the staff, to the nurses, to basically everybody. A couple of days later, Chris arrives in New Mexico at the hospital. She had had a C-section, so she had to stay there for a few days. Now, because Chris was so rude with the hospital staff when he was calling, they were on high alert. And they got a taste of his rudeness when he showed up and didn't appear happy. Nina's sister had to ask him if he wanted to hold his baby, and he simply replied, "I guess." Nina went on to describe the rudest, most hurtful, mean behavior you can even imagine. Now, I tend to believe this woman because she was very emotional when she was telling the story. It sounds like marrying Chris Proudfoot is one of the worst things a woman could do. He sounds very Jekyll and Hyde. If all this is true, this is a man who is incapable of loving others. He has no filter when it comes to how he treats his wife and children. Even in a public place like a maternity ward, Nina describes Chris speaking to her in a loud, disrespectful manner at the hospital, which was noticed by a nurse. And the nurse told Chris, "Look, Nina just brought a life into the world. She just had major surgery, a C-section, and you're yelling at her. I have a problem with that." The nurse told Chris to either knock it off or she was going to get him kicked out of the hospital. But Mr. Fake Charmer was able to sort of improve his behavior for a little while, but then he went right back to his rudeness. He eventually was asked to leave, and only then did he censor his behavior. Nina was discharged, but Chris did not want to stay at her parents' home in New Mexico because, get this, it's a trailer. Now, Nina laughed awkwardly when she mentioned this. She said he didn't want to stay in a trailer, but it really upset me. To hurt your wife's feelings and those of her parents, who, for whatever reason, live in a trailer, is so disrespectful and so antisocial, which really makes me wonder if he does have an antisocial personality disorder. When baby Faith cried, Chris allegedly threw her car seat, with her still in it, on a coffee table. Can you imagine? I would have called the cops right then and there. Of course, Nina was probably afraid of Chris, so maybe she feared what he'd do if she did that. I'm also thinking that maybe she lacks self-esteem because she definitely didn't put herself first or her kids first. And what's upsetting is, usually when you have a child with someone, you're stuck with that person to some degree for life, unless they leave and abandon the child and abandon you. Who would have wanted to have kids with this man? Who would want that guy to be a father? It's got to hurt so much to see that the father doesn't appear to love and embrace his child. I mean, I think a mother could bear the hurt of being mistreated by this man. But to see her innocent baby rejected by its father, that's what hurts the most, I think. You want your child to be adored by its father and wanted. The more I hear about Chris Proudfoot, the more I fear for Sebastian. Teenagers like Sebastian are often a handful. They've got all those hormones raging. I was an absolute pistol for my mother at age 13. I feel so bad now looking back. Teenagers are trying to test the waters. They're moving from being a child to a young adult. They're trying to have some independence. Seth Rogers has said his son could be difficult at times. I doubt Chris Proudfoot had the love and patience that Sebastian required. If Chris couldn't love baby Faith, his own baby, There's no way he could love Sebastian, in my opinion. And how does Chris treat Sebastian's mother, Katie? Has he suddenly become a dream husband who is consistently kind, gentle, loving, patient? I would bet not. Not sure what happened to Chris as a child, but something had to have created this hostile man. Chris even backhanded Nina's daughter, a daughter who was not his biological child, and he broke her lip open. Eventually, Chris asked Nina to move to Hendersonville, Tennessee, and she agreed. Once he got her all settled down, he went back to work in San Diego. So now Nina found herself separated from her parents, and during this period, she found a text on Chris's phone during a visit home, and the text said something like, "Hey baby, when are you getting back into town?" So of course, this very much upset Nina. Chris denied that it was anything romantic. So here's Nina and now her three kids in a town where she has no family, the marriage is crumbling, and it looks like her new husband is cheating. Sounds like a nightmare. These abusive people, like Chris, do this. They isolate their victims. Let me say allegedly, you know, this is Nina's side of the story. We don't know 100%, but this is what it sounds like. So when she saw the text, apparently Nina slapped Chris, and he would later use that against her in a very big way. Now, her daughter also got sick for a period of time and had to go in the hospital. So Chris convinced her to have baby Faith go live with his parents. And that's what happened. She agreed to let them take the baby. But once baby Faith was with Chris's family, Nina found herself served with divorce papers. He also pressed charges for the slap. So now Nina's alone with her kids, and when she goes to get her baby Faith, Chris's father tells Nina Chris isn't in Tennessee, that he's in California, and he also tells Nina to get off his property. So now all of Chris Proudfoot's family, or some of the family members, are attacking Nina, treating her like she's a terrible person, a dangerous, violent person. So Nina basically had to fight really, really hard to get Faith back. Here's this angry, violent man who didn't want baby Faith, but who now gets her away from her mother. He is cruel, vindictive, and scheming, if we are to believe Nina's story. And when Nina went to check her bank account, it looked like he took most of the money out. He'd only left her $1,100. Now she's in need of a lawyer, and she has to fight really, really hard to get her baby back. And she knows this guy is the kind of guy who lays hands on children, allegedly. So she's very worried for Faith. Thank God Nina found a very good lawyer who was willing to represent her, even though she didn't have a ton of money. And she ends up having to go to court. When she gets there, Chris Proudfoot has her baby Faith, and he also has all his family members, and they're like laughing at Nina despite her being in this horrible situation. Nina's father is with her, so she's got her father and her lawyer, and that's about it. And she saw Faith right there. Faith was so close, but she couldn't reach out and touch her. She couldn't even tell Faith that she loved her. So in the end, Nina got supervised visits with Faith, and they were once a week for 30 minutes. So little time with her baby. How could she bond with her? To me, I really believe in Piaget's theory that the first 7 years of a child's life are so critical. You want your child to have happy experiences. You don't want anything that's going to traumatize them. And you certainly don't want to be ripped away from your baby. A baby knows its mother, so it knows when the mother is not there with it suddenly. It sounds like Nina is currently in possession of baby Faith, and she is now fighting to get full custody. And I think that if her story is true, we know why. I know Chris Proudfoot is said to have been away from home on the evening that Sebastian went missing. I don't know if that's been verified by the police or not. I suspect there is so much more to this story, and I find both Katie and Chris Proudfoot to be very suspicious at this point. They're not searching for Sebastian. They're not communicating, at least not until recently when the cops sort of forced Katie to, with Seth Rogers, Sebastian's father. So I have concerns. Until the next time, on Bed Crime Stories. Hey, if you like my work and want to keep me on YouTube, please consider a Patreon or a channel membership. It's only $1.99 a month. So far, I only make about $25 from my memberships a month and $25 about from my Patreons. Clearly, it ain't easy making a living on YouTube. Even the ads don't pay that much. Not a lot, not enough to survive on. Until the next time on Bed Crime Stories, love you guys. Even if you can't afford it, I still love ya.